the third episode of Dope and Disabled Podcast. Well, before we begin, let us introduce ourselves. I am Danette Sellers. I'm the co-founder of Dope and Disabled. And this is
Jane Sellers, the founder of Dope and Disabled.
And tonight we have a special guest that we're going to bring on, where we're going to talk about mental health and the disability community. They deal with a lot. And so our special guest is, we're going to introduce her. Her name is Danae Selvey Morrison. And we'll let you tune in to hear some of the questions we have to ask her. Hi, Danae.
Hi.
Can you please tell our audience your name, your full name, please, and your title?
So my full name is Danae Selvey Morrison. My title right now with Keystone Human Services is mental health professional. But I'm actually a pre-licensed mental health therapist. So my title kind of changes depending on where I work.
Oh, okay. So, well, first of all, welcome. Thanks for being on our podcast. This is our third podcast, and we appreciate you for joining us this evening. We have a couple questions we're going to ask you, but before we begin, I want to ask you to just share a little bit about your background with the mental health and the tied in with the disability community.
Okay. So I spent 3 years being a clinical specialist, they called it, working with individuals with intellectual disabilities, and also like autism, and they would battle depression, anxiety, schizophrenia. It would kind of be like comorbid diagnoses. And comorbid just means two diagnoses at once. So it would be an intellectual disability coupled with a mental health issue. So basically the setup was, it was through Keystone Human Services. The setup was like a residential program for them. So it was 24/7 care all around the clock. You had what we call DSPs, direct support professionals, that would see to the individuals all around the clock. Some family involvement, some not. And my role there was clinically to assess their abilities, create their treatment plans and goals towards life skills. So that could have been cleaning, just household chores. I also worked with a team that would include employment specialists if need be, if they were still, you know, able-bodied enough to work, community participation supports that would take them out in the community and take them to different partial programs such as Marikey, what we call patch and match, where they kind of just, I wouldn't say play, but interact with other individuals their age and start to have some socialization skills built. And I will also create their treatment plans and interventions for maladaptive behaviors. So, you know, some would get aggressive, especially if they weren't on their psychiatric medications. So I was the person that would train the direct care staff how to deal with those crisis, we would call crisis situations. Every home had a program supervisor that will oversee their all their medical appointments, you know, make sure they have the proper dentist, PCP, you know, all those things that we would constitute as having a quality life. And I also was in charge of their psych meds specifically, making sure they had their refills, enough medications to last 3 months. Usually we would see their psychiatrist together every 90 days. And I would provide an update at that time to the psychiatrist and make sure they're on the correct dosage of medication to help them with those behaviors so they could be successful. And then I would then train the team that takes care of them to deal with those behaviors the proper way.
Wow. So did you have to have, what was your schooling? What was, did you have to have degrees to do that? What was your education? What's your background?
So I actually attended Delaware State University. I graduated class of 2018. I have my bachelor's degree, Bachelor of Arts degree in sociology. The funny thing is I didn't plan on being in the mental health field. I actually planned on going into law enforcement. So when I first picked up sociology, that was the reason, because the curriculum at that school went hand in hand with criminal justice. But I didn't want to solely commit to criminal justice. I kind of wanted to have a balance to go between like a social work counseling background and also that sociology standpoint, which is the study of human behavior and why people do what they do. And some people would also call clinical specialists a behavioral specialist, because we do create interventions for, like I said, maladaptive behaviors. And then after that, I went on to get my graduate degree. I got my Master's of Arts in Clinical Mental Health Counseling at Messiah. Messiah University now. When I first started, it was Messiah College. And I'm sorry, before that, I actually went to Philadelphia to Lincoln University. I wasn't really a fan of their program just because their KCREP accreditation was going to be expired. And in order for me to become licensed, the university has to have a KCREP accreditation, which everybody in the mental health field that is seeking licensure understands. So unfortunately, I had to transfer to Messiah, and it ended up being the best thing for me. So,
wow. So that's great. What inspired you to become a mental health counselor?
I was into law enforcement at first. That was my main focus. Even in high school, I had did half a day at Dauphin County Technical School for law enforcement to get those skills. I thought I was going to be a correctional officer in 2018 after graduation at Dauphin County Prison, but things took a turn and I ended up actually working for PA Counseling Services as a therapeutic staff support for children with disabilities or mental health issues in the schools, and also doing family therapy with their parents and siblings at home. But originally, when I was looking into going into law enforcement, I was always focused on the rehabilitation part of it. Mm-hmm. So when I actually went to my interview, one of my summers while I was attending Dell State, I had an internship interview for adult probation services in Harrisburg, in Stilton. And when I went to it, everything they were explaining to me just wasn't fitting what I needed, other than the money. Because they definitely didn't want to pay me to be there Monday to Friday, 8 to 5. And I'm like, I'm a broke college student and I need my coins. But once they didn't allow that part of it, I said, well, let me still look into it just for, you know, just for what I want to do. And once I got to see how it was and go in the field and observe and shadow, what they called it, shadowing. I was like, this isn't for me, because they didn't really focus on the rehabilitation part of it. It seemed more so like I'm trying to meet a quota. You know, I'm trying to lock up my fellow Black and brown people. And that just wasn't what I wanted to do. So because I was focused on that rehabilitation standpoint, I had a coworker at PA Counseling. You know, she also was a graduate of Messiah. That's also how I got connected there. And she was like, did you ever think about counseling? I'm like, counseling? I always thought counseling was guidance counselor at a school or, you know, something of that sort. And I'm like, I've been in school long enough. I don't want to be in another school for 8 hours a day. I'm done with school settings. And she's like, no, like mental health counseling, you can work in a psych ward, psych hospital. You can work in residential programs. And I'm like, okay. Well, I guess let me look into that. Especially with me attending Dell State, I was a cadet working for their police department also. So I was really wrapped up in this law enforcement thing. I'm like, I don't know. I kind of got my mindset. I thought I had my path together. They said, if you want to make God laugh, tell him what you got planned. So I thought I had a plan all set up and this blueprint for law enforcement. And God said, I got something better for you. You gonna help somewhere else in another way, the way you want to help. So my rehabilitation went over to counseling, and now I'm doing exactly what I want to do. They're really in rehabilitation through counseling. So
wow, that's awesome. That's awesome. So what do you think some of the challenges that disabled people face every day? What do you think some of their challenges are? Because I know disability is unseen and seen disability. So what do you think from your experience in working with the disability community, not just kids and adults, what do you think their challenges are? Some of their biggest challenges are that they face every day.
So from what I've seen through kids and adults over the years, the main barrier is lack of support. And I say that lack of support in all areas, employment, community participation, family. Family is big, because you have a lot of people with disabilities that are very unmotivated. And that might be from depression, or they might not even have a depression diagnosis. It might just be simply no support that makes them feel like they can't do something. So encouragement is big. Positive reinforcement is big. It might sound, tedious to us, but if they do something great, they want to hear about it. Like, you did a great job doing it. It could be the smallest thing. You did a great job making your bed today. Something so small. And another barrier for them, I would say, is lack of resources. And that also couples with lack of support. Because if you have the support you need, your support can advocate for you. They can get you the resources you need. Because, being disabled, you might be nonverbal. You might have a severe intellectual disability where you can't comprehend certain things. You might be able to write things that you want, but you can't vocalize it, or you can't express yourself, effectively. So those are the main barriers. Transportation is a big one. Yeah. If they're not able to drive, support, if you don't have that family support to get you around. A lot of programs don't have transportation. If you don't have the ability and comprehension to get a bus schedule and catch a bus, if you have social anxiety you're battling and you can't get out there and talk to people and get those resources for yourself, or you're just scared to go outside and walk to the bus stop, all those things. And then they have psych meds for things like that. But again, if you have that lack of support, lack of resources, you don't know how to get in contact with a psychiatrist and say, hey, I'm having these symptoms and problems, and get a diagnosis and get those proper meds that you need. Another barrier could be lack of shelter. When you don't feel safe, everything's all over the place. So you don't have your basic needs. We call that Maslow's hierarchy of needs. So you don't have food, shelter, all that stuff. So again, if you notice, everything I'm saying circles back around to support. So I just wanted to break it down for you, the different supports. But overall, the main barrier is lack of support.
Right. And support is really important. And I understand what you're saying, especially with the resources, with them not having transportation. Because he works 2 days a week, and he doesn't have the bus, and he doesn't have the van picking him up. And it's a lot of, he's not eligible for this, he's not eligible for that. So then that falls back on the parents or the siblings or him simply not being able to work because he can't get there. But he has to be to work at 6 o'clock in the morning. So then I have to adjust my schedule to make sure that he gets to work on time. And you're right, he does need that reinforcement of encouragement that you're doing a good job. Keep going, don't stop, because he did want to give up. And then I said, we talked about it, and I encouraged him to keep going and keep going, and he's still working. And I thank God for that. And I thank God for you being in your field, for being a voice for the voiceless, because they don't have anybody. And it's hard to get people who really care, who's not just doing things for a paycheck. And that's where a lot of times we fall short, is people's just there for a paycheck, mm-hmm. instead of caring about the people, or caring about the people's needs. They're just there to get in and get out. So one of the resources I do know that they're trying to do as far as government agencies with the kids or the adults who have the support is try to get them on the payroll so they can pay for the disabled to stay in their own homes. Because when they go out to these programs, you don't know how they're going to be treated in those housings. You don't know if they're going to eat. But if they don't have any family, they don't have a choice. Mm-hmm. So I commend you on that. We need more of you. We need more of mental health therapists, because we don't know what they're battling behind closed doors. We don't know what they're battling in their rooms. We don't know what they're battling in their heads. We don't know any of that. So, and a lot of them don't want to talk. So for you to mentor them or be the counselor where you get them to have conversation on how they're feeling, that's great. And I think that's awesome. So James is going to jump in here and ask you a question.
What career do you recommend for people with disabilities?
What career do I recommend for people with disabilities? So again, it just depends on, as far as autism, where you are on the spectrum, if you're verbal or nonverbal, if you have mild or severe intellectual disability. Again, I did bring up employment specialists, if you have that resource. And you don't have to be in a residential program to get these resources either. And I know a lot of people have like case managers or what we call supports coordinators through CMU, case management unit, and their turnaround time is crazy. People always get a new one because, like you said, a lot of people are just there for the check. And once the check is not, and I think the problem is CMU has such a big caseload and so many people are on one person's caseload that it's kind of like a factory. Like, these people are real human beings and people with feelings and a disability and need help and resources. And to them, it's just like, okay, I got to see person A, B, C, and D this week and get it out the way and do the same thing next week. I don't think they mean for it to be that way, but it just happens that way. But I kind of stared left a little bit. So back to the question. So the job I would recommend for people with disabilities, again, just depends on where they are in their journey. But the jobs I see them having most would be like janitorial jobs. So, you know, either dusting, vacuuming, whatever they can handle, whatever. Because, you know, some people are in wheelchairs. Some people have, you know, braces, spina bifida, different things like that. So as long as you're able-bodied, they can actually do a lot. But you can always tell your job coach or your employment specialist your limits, and they always respect those. They have to. It's a law. So whatever you can do, you just let them know. But I see a lot, fast food, janitorial. I know if you're good with your money handling skills and counting and things like that, people work at convenience stores, Rite Aid, Dollar General, Giant. You might be a stocker overnight, whatever schedule you want to go with, however many days a week you want to work. Most employers are pretty good with, you know, recognizing you have a disability and being very inclusive. But again, that goes back to support, having someone to advocate for you, because disabled people are discriminated against in the workplace. Some employers are familiar with it, some employers aren't, but that's where it comes to having that support and someone to advocate for you, and make sure you get that job and meet the limitations and things like that, so that you're not overworked and underpaid or doing more than what you're capable of doing and things like that, making sure you're treated fairly.
That's great. So do they have someone that advocates for them and like going into the job? Like for him, he had a job coach that I chose and I interviewed, and she was really good, and I chose her for the job, and that's how he got his employment. Do they have a lot of job coaches out there, and are the job coaches, is there many available?
So realistically, a lot of people with disabilities, and especially if their parents and family are involved, they want them working. They want them out in the community if need be, if they can withstand it enough, especially if they have psychiatric issues and medications they have to take. You know, some people take more meds than others, more often than others. It comes back to, are they self-medicating independently? Do they depend on somebody to make sure they take their medications? You know, are they incontinent? Do they use the bathroom on their own? Do they not? Like, all those things play a factor. But if you're more, you know, higher functioning, independent type of thing going on, you're kind of on your own So what job coaches call it, they call it fading out. So they'll be with you a lot at first and make sure everything's when you're showing up on time, you're clocking out on time, you know, the basics, make sure you're not getting fired, make sure you're following the rules, you're dressing appropriately, you don't look disheveled and unclean, and make sure you're just, you know, meeting your task demands of your boss and things like that. So once they make sure you're doing all that stuff, they'll start to fade out. So they'll start to be there less. They'll start coming in later than you in the middle of your shift or at lunch break and see how the morning went, depending on how long your shift is and things like that. Or they might come 1 or 2 days out the week, but not three or four days for your whole schedule and things like that.
Yeah, he had that, and now she's faded out. So it's just basically me and siblings doing the transportation, make sure he gets to work and things like that. I know you're pre-licensed mental health therapist. Are you a faith-based I know there's counselors out there who are basically they're faith-based, like they're Christian counselors. There's some that's Muslim counselors. Like, are you faith-based?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, do you operate your counseling based on the word and prayer, and you incorporate that into your counseling?
So I do consider myself to be a faith-based counselor or spiritual counselor, whichever term you want to go with. And I've always operated from that standpoint. Like, even if I chose to go into law enforcement, even though I was focused on that rehabilitation piece, I always felt like I'm going to go into this rehabilitation piece of it with God and prayer and my armor on. Because you need it, you know, you never know the backgrounds of the disabled. Some people, I always tell people you got to have a trauma-informed approach. Some people come in, you know, with sexual assault backgrounds and molestation backgrounds and verbal and psychological and emotional abuse and mental abuse. So you never know what people went through before, you know, they got into these programs or came to see you. Especially with the older people that were born way before my time. You know, some of them been to places before laws were put in place for the disabled. So, you know, they were in restrained and chained up to beds and sedated and, you know, like deemed to be crazy or possessed and things like that. And I know in the Black community, you know, growing up, everybody said, ain't nothing wrong with you. Just go pray. You know, so, and it's not a lot of Black counselors either. You know, a lot of Black people don't go to school, don't even know that this is even a career option. And a lot of colleges, even Dell State, don't even have a counseling program. So it's like, where do you even find it to go? And, you know, therapy is not a big thing in the Black community. So people don't know.
Right.
And that's also why a lot of Black people don't know the resources either for the disabled. But that's a whole nother thing. What was your question again?
I am glad that you are faith-based,
mm-hmm.
because I think you have to start with God. Mm-hmm. I believe you have to start with God because He is the drive. He is the guy. He's the leader. So I believe it starts with Him, and then He will guide you in the direction in which you should go. I strongly believe that. And you need that. You really need Him in this world, and you need Him dealing with all the different people that you deal with, that you come up against, because you don't know what spirits people are carrying.
Mm-hmm.
And that is real. So do you have anything you want to add or ask Danae? Anything else that you can think of that you want to ask her?
And as far as spiritual, I do want to add, it's all about cultural competency too. You know, different cultures believe in different things. Like I've counseled people that believe in Buddha. They have some type of higher power. It might not be, you know, Jesus or Christianity, but you have to meet clients where they are. I can't say, oh, I'm not going to see you because you don't identify as Christian or have a Christian background. Right. You kind of got to meet people where they are. You know, I've counseled all different religions and things like that. And I just put it in their language. Who do you believe in? What do you believe in? What is your culture and background? Some people, like, I know, like, in the Asian community, they're not into eye contact. So to us, we might say, oh, they're not even looking at me. That looks like distrustful. And that look, but yeah, to them, it's a sign of disrespect to look somebody in the eye, especially as a female that's Asian. So it's like little things like that you have to watch out for, what we call ethics in counseling. So as far as the spirituality piece, yes, I do, you know, reach out to them in that way. But I also make sure I'm culturally competent and make sure I know, you know, who they pray to, who their higher power is, if anyone at all, and go based on that.
Okay. Well, we're coming to a close. So we do want to thank you. And how can our guests or our viewers reach you if they have any questions or they need resources? How can they reach you? Is there a Facebook or email or Instagram? How can they reach you for questions?
So you can reach out to me on Facebook with my name, Danae Selvey Morrison. I'm always open for DMs or messenger inboxes, whatever you want to call it. I also have business cards actively being made now, which I can provide later on. But my email address is dselveymorrison@khs.org. If you do want to reach out to me through my mental health professional email, and I always get back to everyone within 24 business hours. So
thank you very much. I greatly appreciate you for sharing your information with us, for allowing us to ask you questions. I also thank you for being the voice of so many others. I cannot express that enough. I thank you for being a Black woman, a spiritual Black woman, to be out here and leading our culture, our nationality. I commend you on that, because there isn't many. So to my guests, my viewers, like and share this Dope and Disabled podcast. We would greatly appreciate it. This was some good information. If you want to get a hold of Danae Morrison, Selvi Morrison, she has given you her contact information. If you need resources, just reach out to her and she'll get you the information. I thank you very much. You want to say anything to Danae before we close?
Keep doing what you love and never stop.
Thank you, James. And thank you, Danette, for having me.
You're welcome.